What if I told you that even the worst neighborhood in America could be made completely safe? How do I know this? Because it's happening right now in every country in the world but this one. It is great to see American machines helping to promote peace abroad. So then tell me, why can't we use these machines here at home? Why is America so robophobic?
We need to give Americans a product they can love, a figure they can rally behind.
We can't put a machine on the street.
Forget machines. They want a product with a conscience. Something that knows what it feels like to be human.
Give your mom a kiss.
Bye, baby.
Too slow, boy.
We're gonna put a man inside a machine.
Time to wake him up.
Make him more tactical. Let's go with black.
Quality control, EM-208 versus Tin Man.
Wow. We are going to make a lot of money.
He's coming.
Won't play good cop, bad cop.
Bad cop, RoboCop.
He's undoing what we did to him.
Shut him down!
Thank you for your cooperation. This is episode 2 of Lucid Reviews podcast. We're back to talk about the RoboCop remake. Now I know everyone's excited to talk about the reboot. I know I am. We've got a few interesting things to touch upon with this, whatever this movie is. I'll just give a brief overview of RoboCop 2014. RoboCop 2014. It's 117 minutes long. RoboCop 1987, 102 minutes long. So already they've added 15 minutes onto I mean, in my mind, you know, every minute counts. So when you're running 15 minutes past the movie you're rebooting, you really should be adding something to it. Good. You know, but we can leave that for later discussion. The budget for RoboCop 2014, $100 million. The budget for the original RoboCop, $13 million. Now, granted, that's
inflation.
Yeah,
not that much.
Now, RoboCop 2014 opening weekend gross in the U.S. $25 million, and as of March 3rd, it was estimated at $51 million. So, in about 3 weeks, it made back half of its budget. And compare that to 1987 opening weekend gross $8 million, and its total gross, you know, it's had what, 20 something years, it's grossed $53 million. So compared to its $13 million budget, even on its opening weekend, it made almost all of its money back. Both films took 3 months to shoot. Neither of them were shot in Detroit. This one was shot in Toronto. And its writer, Joshua Setumer, is also credited with the original writers. I was surprised to see that in the credits that the original two writers were there, but they're just there, you know.
Because they wrote the original.
Yeah, they had not. I don't think they
created the story, and the characters.
I was surprised because if they were actually involved, I was baffled as to why they would butcher their own previous work, which I think this is a butchering. I'd like to just give a before we get more into the discussion, I'll just repeat a few quotes from some popular reviews around the web and publication. Peter Travers from Rolling Stone is quoted as saying, "This robo-reboot tries fiercely to update the satirical punch and stylistic perversity Paul Verhoeven's 1987 original. It's a futile gesture. Brazilian director Jose Padilla of Elite Squad and Bus 174 soldiers on stolidly, but lacks the Dutch Verhoeven's abiding sense of mischief. Go ahead, skewer American jingoism and right-wing perspectives all you want. That never gets old. But do it with a specific point of view. Padilla seems content to just go through the motions." Ty Burr of the Boston Globe says, "The new RoboCop, in quotes, is rehashed business as usual, an acceptable muscle-bound B-movie whose handful of fresh plot twists are drowned out by gunfire and dull action choreography. It has a great supporting cast, flavorless lead actor, and some notions about free will that aren't nearly as original or well-developed as screenwriter Joshua Zetoomer thinks." And finally, Scott Mendelson says, "One could argue that the film is basically about its own construction, with characters constantly talking about making RoboCop more family-friendly, warmer and more emotional, cooler looking, and then changing their minds about one aspect or another and reverting to the familiar. But that doesn't excuse the fact that the film just doesn't work. It spends nearly the entire first two-thirds setting up the notion of RoboCop, only to have immediately get thrust into the solve-his-own-murder and take-out-the-corporate-baddies climax. Quite frankly, this RoboCop film spends almost no time being RoboCop." So, we'll let those be, I think, the opening words for this review. I think I can agree with most of that. I think that hits a lot of the points that I felt when I first, you know, walked out of the theater and reflected on what I was watching, although I thought the movie was so loosely constructed that I had time to reflect on the movie while I was watching the movie. I'll hand it over to you guys, Ryan and Ian. Please take it away.
Well, if you don't mind, I'll go first. I only have one critique. Like Adrian, I do agree with a lot of those opening statements from the other reviews. However, I feel that it's coming to the director's defense here, and I'm quoting IMDb.com, that Padilla estimated that for every 10 ideas he brought to the project, the studio refused 9. And I'll just end it with that, saying that there does seem to be a lot of creative control or lack thereof on the director's part. So just offering that defense, just because I feel it's justified, and that maybe there's, if we're looking to point a finger and to blame why this movie was such a travesty, I think it, you know, that's a starting point. But otherwise, you know.
Yeah, well, you actually kind of enjoyed the movie, though, when you watching it the first time, right? I mean, there's no shame in saying that.
No.
John definitely got some enjoyment out of it, too. I mean, I feel like you two were kind of on the same side about that, whereas Adrian and I kind of immediately... I actually would say probably it was about halfway through where I realized that I didn't like the movie.
Yeah.
And I really can't tell if that was because I was just trying to see where it went and kind of like held off judgment because I thought, well, maybe this is building up to something interesting, and then it just never materialized. Or maybe it was because, yeah, we definitely went to go see this with the intention of comparing it to the original and reviewing it, so maybe I had a more critical eye than usual. But whereas most of the time I see a movie and I kind of reserve judgment, I might actually even enjoy it a little bit, and then when I reflect on it, realize that it was crap. This definitely... About halfway through the movie, I realized that I didn't like it. you know, and justifiably so. But I mean, visually, there were some interesting things, I suppose, and you know, it can lead you on long enough where you're kind of seeing where it's going, and you might get some enjoyment out of that. But I mean, what did you like about it?
I guess at some point I realized that this movie certainly had a lot of potential for being a better film, and that because I do agree that it was not good, I guess I just didn't want to be I'll be joined in and kicking this movie while it's down, really, and just bashing the crap out of it. But it had such potential that and it did touch upon certain themes and elements that are interesting, you know, movie plot points or talk points or whatever. But yeah, ultimately, I do agree that I wouldn't recommend that you go see the movie in the theaters. I wouldn't recommend that you buy the DVD. If you're very interested in seeing it for whatever reason, wait till you can rent it. So,
if that.
That's a good recommendation.
Yeah. Right. I will say this, in the original review of RoboCop, one critique I offered was that I felt that some of the family and aspects were a little undertoned, and I hope to see a little bit more of that in the remake, and where in the remake we got way too much of that, I feel, or at least it was, you know, it wasn't done in a way that, you know, I felt it needed to be done, you know, that, like Ryan said, that, you know, they're trying to generate feelings that you felt bad for RoboCop, that you felt he was, you know, his family was, his family was really
important to him.
Yeah, right. And
that's it.
And yeah. Again, I felt that they touched upon these things, and that you were given the appearance of some of these things, but there was just very little substance to it.
It was almost as though they had thought
for the remake.
In the remake, it was almost as if they thought, if we give the family more screen time, that's all we have to do to make
it would take care of itself somehow.
But then they forgot to cast the parts appropriately, or to like have any sort of real dialogue between the family and a relationship. Almost like they just said, all right, well, if we just show them on screen for longer than the original, then I definitely felt that the original was more effective. Like, even though the family was shown less, they had less screen time, I felt more sympathy for the family in the first one.
I agree.
It's like,
right, they did less with more in the first film.
Yeah,
where you said they added 15 minutes to this film, and yet we still felt like we were cheated somehow. That there's something missing there.
Well, because this movie really should be called How to Train Your RoboCop. It's just, most of the movie is, it's as if, the first thing I thought when the movie ended was, they basically spent most of this movie explaining to us how they got to RoboCop. Mm-hmm. Whereas the first movie,
it's like, here's RoboCop, now the film.
Yeah. We worked out the kinks now. You know, we don't need to we don't need to walk you through all these, like, demos and alpha phases and beta phases of RoboCop and put him in different armor and do a press release. Let's go see what happens when you have a robot cop. But this one was, like, really, I thought, really boring. It's as if I was watching the writers go through the brainstorming process of, like, where does this story start?
Right.
You know?
And it doesn't until about 40 minutes into the film. All the while, they are holding your hand with all these needless sort of critiques
That's a good way to put it. It's needless. Yeah. And it's, I wonder, and everybody will say, like, maybe it's some kind of clever, like, self-referential story about how the movie itself was made,
But that's not what you expect from an action film, you know?
I could see that being a scene.
Yeah, okay, sure.
But not
the whole movie.
40 minutes of it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, and it went on and on, and I didn't really feel like it got to any truth about the character or the company. I mean, we know that the company wanted to sell a product, and we know that they cared, but we didn't need to see that. I don't know that all of the technical phases of constructing him, because we didn't go into the movie expecting to be taught how they made him into RoboCop. Mm-hmm. We just wanted to see him be RoboCop,
right?
Or, you know, and I found that there was early on, I remember thinking they were spending a lot of time on like the pseudoscience of how they were making him into a RoboCop, and actually spending dialogue explaining this,
right,
and not just showing us as if it was ever going to matter, as if, you know, how they managed to work out the circulation or all like the controls and the brain interface like really needed to be that laid out to the audience, because they never,
it seemed like they were really just giving you science, which unfortunately has it's boring, you know, all the, when you're faced with a bunch of facts and data, you were getting a bunch of facts and data, and that it was very lacking in any sort of philosophical implications that science often does. You know, that this movie was essentially it was a presentation between the conflicts of consciousness and the will, and that was something that, again, I see the potential where they could have had this very, you know, cogent scientifically or scientific and philosophically driven plot narrative, but that they just failed to produce that, and they got too much focused on, like you said, these nitty gritty factual data things. It almost seemed like they maybe had an agenda to just promote this sort of like, you know, this is what consciousness is, that's what leading science says about it, and that's the end of it. You know, there's no room for anything
else. That at all, though.
I feel like what they do is they took...
Well, they tried to, and yeah, it was very lacking again in substance, even in that respect, yes.
It was very cookie-cutter. It was very much like, we have this story, we have this information to parse out over the course of the whole story, we'll plug it in as we go, and none of it felt like a seamless whole. None of it felt like an organic, like, oh, you know... We're gaining insight into the spirit and human mind and interface with technology as a result of watching these characters deal with it. It was more like, here's a man who's been basically turned into a robot cop, and here are the scientists talking to each other about him.
Right.
And that's... It was all like ham-fisted.
Yeah.
Almost, they might as well have been talking to the camera.
Right.
In some of these lines.
And instead of a movie, this could have well served as a documentary about how... Yeah. Science might actually go about this, you know.
But that said, you know, I agree that there, in the subtext of the movie, is the discussion of the human spirit. I mean, obviously, that's sort of a subtext. I think
that's
but and overtly, they're talking about what's the role of robotics in law enforcement. It's sort of like I thought they would. They're sort of drawing comparisons to drones today.
Yeah, that's true. That was another subplot. Sure.
Yeah, and autonomy. You know, how do you hold accountable robots?
Mm-hmm.
How do you trust computers to do what has essentially been an ethical thing?
Right.
When you can turn the law into programming. But there's a line in the movie where, near the end, machines are incorruptible or something that somebody says.
Oh, yeah, it was absurd.
It was so absurd. Like, I'm really pretty sure that's not true.
In fact, I'll bet some money on it. Yeah. I'll bet my ticket back.
Pretty sure that computers are full of flaws because they're designed by flawed beings.
Sure.
We can't make a perfect anything.
Right.
But there were, so I could, there's like a lot of potential for a very interesting and thought-provoking update to what RoboCop was about, you know.
Yeah.
But they did gloss over a lot of it.
I would say, argue that they, all of it, and that's probably why the movie was frustrating for me, is because there was so much opportunity for greatness, really, I guess. But, I mean, because I wasn't expecting it to be, basically the same RoboCop story that we knew, but just kind of made relevant for a new audience, made cutting relevant edge. for these times. And then instead, it's almost kind of like just them referencing, you know, topics. Like, for example, like the opening scene in Afghanistan, Like,
it's almost like, it was actually
in Tehran. It was just like they just showed us that, be like, oh, this is relevant to you.
Yeah.
Like,
I agree.
It just, but just showing that doesn't really make it relevant. I mean, they didn't really explore that. It was just.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it, you know, it fell victim to the same kind of short-sightedness that the original did in terms of envisioning the future.
Because
in the original, they envisioned the future as the future of robotics is essentially
man and machine.
The robotics that they had in the 80s.
Oh,
You just figure, oh, it would be a little bit, it would just be like a fully realized version of what they have then.
Right.
And I thought, in 2028, we've got these fully functional robotic sentries, like humanoid robots that are carrying out sophisticated scans. You know, and we're led to believe that the future of warfare is still explosives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're still going to walk around. That people are only going to be able to fight these things by carrying out suicide bomb attacks on them. Whereas any, like, a tiny amount of research into the subject, you would find out that cyber warfare is the future of warfare at all, especially when you're dealing with a military force that is entirely computerized.
Right.
You don't have to even fire a single gun.
Right.
You just use viruses and computer commands, right, and that's the future of warfare. So the idea that, like, essentially we're fighting the same war, except we've just got, the Americans have better weapons now.
Right.
Is a little short-sighted.
Right.
And I think it is. It's like intentionally used to tug at your emotions and paint a familiar picture of now. But again, it doesn't, just like it doesn't do it later on when they showed the factory or the facility in China. There's no like geopolitical context for these things that we're shown. We're not ever like actually given any reasoning as to why there is an occupying force in Iran, or why you know, why Omnicorp is doing all their operations in China. It's just sort of accepted.
Right.
It's just there, and there's no discussion.
A little bit more creativity could have been employed. And that, yeah, they could have just, you're right, because the Iraq war and our occupation of Afghanistan is supposedly over, you know, or at least it's not headlining current news, it's not current affairs. So in that respect, it's actually not even sort of relevant to do that. Instead, they could have, you know, implicated Russia or China or whatever, you know, so it's, you know, just anything at will. I mean, that's the nature of creativity. But I guess maybe changing gears here, one thing I did want to mention or talk about is that some of the appeal this movie had, or at least it tried to, was, you know, it did have somewhat of a star-studded cast in that of Gary Oldman and Samuel L. Jackson. And, of course, that's all just opinion whether you like these actors or not, but I felt that Samuel Jackson playing the role of Pat Novak was pretty good, because Samuel Jackson does play a good, you know, D. You know what I mean? He's a guy you like to hate, you know, sort of. So I guess the movie was sort of character rich in that respect. So I guess that's one sort of bonus to it. And I did like Novak's character overall. And I thought they did a decent job with that, at least trying to, you know, going further with that element with respect to the first one, where, you know, again, we talked about how the media is always sort of involved there, and the media was itself a sort of silent character. But I thought they did a pretty good job of Novak with that character, whereas other reviews were a little sort of harsh on that.
Well, I thought it was used as a way, as sort of like a crutch.
Yeah.
For the whole, I mean, because, again, it's just, I mean, it,
I guess what I'm saying is that it could have been worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it wasn't that bad, you know.
I honestly would say, sadly, I thought that was some of the best parts of the movie.
Okay, so I think we're agreed then. Yeah. Yeah, okay, yeah.
Which is not a compliment.
No, it's not. It's not, because something like that is definitely a minor part of the film, yeah.
I mean, they relied on the star power of Samuel L. Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's plenty of teasers and trailers that lead with him.
Sure, yeah.
You know, they're showing you a familiar face in a charismatic role, and they want you to buy into the whole plot. I liked it, but I felt like the rest of the movie didn't live up to it.
No.
It didn't have the same intensity, I didn't think.
No.
But what did you guys think about the whole, like, starting with a... It didn't start with a flashback. But essentially, I think when we meet Murphy in the beginning, his partner had just been shot up,
mm-hmm.
or is in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And then there was a flashback, right?
Yeah.
To how he got shot up.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of an example of sloppy writing.
Mm-hmm.
Not, you know, why do that? Why show us him after he shot and then show us? Why not put us in real time?
Yeah, there really wasn't a purpose behind that I can think of.
It seemed like that whole segment was sort of rushed, where getting revenge on Murphy's killer was a big theme in the first one. It was sort of rushed and got less time in this film, in the remake.
Mm-hmm.
And that this movie, it did seem to sort of compete with, like, what is the overall theme here? You know, we're talking about current affairs, we're talking about, you know, will versus consciousness, and then all the while trying to remain true to all the other theme points and plots of the original. So,
yeah, it couldn't focus on the thing that it wanted to do.
It was not a smooth juxtaposition, or it was a juxtaposition that had very poor transition, so... I think that would pretty much round out your critique there on the flashback sequence.
Yeah, I agree. I think it suffered from trying. I don't want to say it suffered from trying to do too much at once. Mm-hmm. I think it suffered from not fully realizing
anything
what it wanted to do. No, I mean, yeah, it didn't really. It set out to tie together issues of the role of unmanned. Law enforcement,
mm-hmm.
you know, the future of that, the ethics of that, set out to tackle what it means to be a human that's been stripped of their entire body. Basically, mm-hmm. they exist as like in a shell. I mean, and then have their free will taken from them, but only have the illusion of a free will, mm-hmm. you know, when the programming takes over.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some interesting concepts, but it didn't weave them together very well.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't think that's because it's too much to put on the plate. I think it's because the movie probably just got rushed through the process, as studios tend to do. They said, oh, we got a blockbuster on our hands,
right.
and we'll market the shit out of it,
right.
instead of actually developing it into a good story.
Right.
Yeah. Do you think they kind of tied their hands by sticking too close to the original RoboCop story? I mean, do you think that exploring... I mean, I can definitely see how exploring the humanity, free will aspect ties in with following the original story, but the whole, you know, unmanned drones, you know, technology's role in law enforcement, you could argue, but I really feel like in order to make it more relevant for these times, it probably... they could have done better by departing more from the original story. But, and also, too, I kind of get the sense almost like it was, like, it kind of wanted to be an origins story, how they explored his creation. But, I mean, I think, like, for example, a movie that did that really well, I thought, was Unbreakable.
Mm.
I mean, that's basically an origin story. In, you know, the payoff at the end when you find out that he is a superhero.
Yeah.
I mean, that was one of my favorite movies.
Good example.
And
so what you're saying is an origin story should be a complete story.
Yeah.
In and of itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't really... I mean, if it's going to be an origin story, then it should be just that. Don't think really... time for these broad issues. I mean, if it's going to be an origin story, it should be an origin story, not, you know, all these other 10 different other things that they could have done. And yeah, like I said, I think that they did squander a lot of opportunities. I mean, just, yeah, like the whole free will versus programming, how he RoboCop overcomes his programming at the end. It's just like, oh yeah, like,
remember when he did that?
Yeah,
the first,
like,
one?
I mean, like, right. But like, it's like just referenced. I mean, it happens in the last like 15, 20 minutes of the movie. And then there's like no, it's like in passing, it's like referenced in passing. It's like, it doesn't make anything of it. It's like, oh yeah, yeah, he just overcame his programming. But like, that's a big, that's a big thing. They just gloss over it.
Yeah.
I agree. I think they did it. Well, you asked me about, do I think they tied their hands by trying to stick too closely to the original? And I mean, I can see, I can look at it, and you can pick out all the instances in this movie that are essentially just extrapolations of the plot points in the original one.
Right.
I think that, yeah, maybe they did. I mean, I feel like what they did was they stuck to the original plot points and a lot of the similar issues, but they just reorganized them in a way that's less effective.
Yeah, there was no, the continuity and flow was not present in this film.
Yeah, I mean, I think I wrote down 2% dopamine. You know, they lowered his dopamine down to 2%.
Right.
And the way he behaved then was the way the original RoboCop behaved.
Right.
The RoboCop that I think everyone liked from the original. Like, that's what RoboCop is. He's a robot. And that's another interesting point. The original RoboCop, Alex Murphy's dead.
Right.
He died.
I just want to critique, in the original, he was pronounced dead, or actually died. That's what, at least what we were told. Whereas in the remake, he was going to die unless Omnicorp intervened.
Turn his corpse into RoboCop. And then the idea that Alex Murphy somehow comes back is an interesting kind of event, that it's a sort of demonstration of some kind of human spirit alive in the flesh, that he's dead and comes back.
Yeah, in this one, he's never, whole rebirth theme in the original, but yeah, there was, really wasn't,
he didn't die.
There's just a lot of unexplained stuff, like why they decided to keep his hand, his like right hand, alive when it was, he had no arm left. It was just like the severed hand, just like maybe to look cool, I guess. I mean, that's kind of what the whole movie is, in essence.
I think it does. This gets to what Ian had brought up about some of the themes of spirit being inherent in this movie. Human spirit existing sort of despite the mechanical interference is there, but it's done in such a way that's like so lacking in nuance and creative storytelling, because they literally, there are lines where they have the guitar playing robot man hand who says, it's like when I feel and I have emotions, that the machine doesn't work. Or,
right. I need emotions to play, is what he said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's another line where one of the assistants says, it's like there's something else blocking his programming. You mean like a spirit? Like
yeah.
Or soul looks at the camera.
Yeah, there's just
it was insulting.
It is. Yeah. You know, it's just like a lot of other parts of the movie where essentially they're having the characters explain to you what this movie is about.
Right.
And I'd rather them actually just show us that.
Right. It's almost as if the movie assumes that just because these aren't really things that we deal with on a day-to-day basis, or they're not common talking points, that we don't understand them and that we don't think about them at all, or, you know, so that they had to feed us these lines, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's dumbed down in a way.
Right, yeah, which is insulting, you know, yeah. As opposed to being an intriguing film, you know, and sparking these, like, wow, I never thought of it that way before, you know.
And, by the way, John, who just appeared on this podcast, who was there with us at that
fateful day.
That fateful Wednesday night screening where we only four of us in the theater. I lost my train of thought there.
Well, joining us now is John with his critique.
What did you think about how direct some of these themes were? You know, they might as well, I think, might as well have been saying, well, we've just spent 5 minutes explaining to you this, and now we're going to review it to make sure you can get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's you know, you guys are just talking about the whole, you know, the human emotion clashing with the, you know, the robotic side. And, you know, some of those moments you picked out, you know, when I was watching it, they just seemed, you know, separated and not connected. Mm-hmm. You know, they were little bits and pieces that they were tossing you here and there, but there was, you know, there was no overall... You know, like, yeah, literally, you know, there was no overall, like, really strong theme that I feel like they were trying to show you. It was just like, oh, we should add these in. And that was, you know, that was kind of a letdown because, you know, RoboCop, you know, it's one of the main things. He's half cop, he's half human, half robot, you know what I mean? And then you know that one of the main things you expect with something like that is, you know, how is this human gonna... And I feel like, especially with this new movie, you know, there might have been a... The way they had set it up is that, you know, he had all of his memory, really, from when he was still a human. And I feel like there was more potential to explore these, you know, these emotions, these, you know... Like, you know, what you know, the feelings he must be going through now that he's a cyborg... more so to the original movie because of his awareness, his strong awareness of who he is and who he was. And I didn't get much of that.
Well, that's because he didn't die, like we were saying earlier, he didn't die in this one. Which, and another thing, like, that kind of hurt it was they talked about how he had fourth degree burns over 80% of his body, which, I mean,
this is important because Ryan, you work in medical.
Yeah, unless this is a new thing, there is no such thing as fourth degree burns.
He was turned to charcoal.
He should have been, but then you see, a picture of him like in a hospital bed, and like really, like he's missing his left leg and I think his left arm, and that's about it. And like, yeah, his skin doesn't look great, but like,
would that even
he's definitely not like, he's definitely not burnt like in the photo, like. Mm. So I mean, there's that, and then which also kind of hurts the. I mean, if you go through all you like, you can show basically just in the film they make the effort to show his head, his lungs, which are just in like a glass container, and then like his disembodied like hand. Like, you can show that, but then they don't take the time to make the body look like they described it earlier in the movie, which hurts that. And also, like, when you see him in the hospital bed, it's like, he actually could have lived like that, I guess. I mean, like, it wouldn't have been, like, a quality life, I guess, but... It definitely wasn't as bad, which kind of takes the whole wind out of, like, oh, we needed to turn... Like, the only way he could have survived is if we had turned him into RoboCop.
He was also paralyzed, they said.
Oh, they did say that?
I don't think it was the case that they needed... The only way for him to live is if they did this. I think the situation in this case was, oh, you know, the police, you know, we need a test dummy to, you know, we want a robot, but they want a human being to control.
Also, if he would I mean, if they could make... If they could repair or create some sort of system to have him control his appendages as a robot with his own brain, then that leads me to think that they could have tried to have some workaround for the paralysis in real life, because, I mean, essentially, you're doing the same thing.
Yeah, like, why can't they just create, like, a new cybernetic nervous system for his organic body?
That didn't really hurt it so much. I mean, that's a relatively minor complaint compared to some of the other ones in the movie, but...
Well, I mean, I want to settle this, especially with John. Which was the real hand? The right hand or the left hand? Because I think I saw that they switched it.
You know, Adrian, at this point...
We're just going to have to see it again. I know that's not going to happen.
I don't think anyone's going to really know.
Well, no, that scene where they show RoboCop through a mirror. And I think that's where some of the confusion...
I think it was done deliberately to throw us off.
Yeah.
The scent for when later when they switched
it. It was to distract you from the plot holes in the movie.
Yeah. Something I just want to add, I thought would have been a cool idea for the film is that...
He had both hands.
Well, talking about, you know, synthetic nervous systems and having this Robo-Man suit, RoboCop suit, that they could have went with the idea, and again, it would just add this other element that would have been like, yeah, wow, that's kind of cool, is that, you know, why did he strictly have to have this robot? I mean, it would have been robotic, but, you know, he didn't necessarily have to be this one suit. You know, he could have had many suits, sort of like Iron Man, if you will. I mean, maybe that would have bitten too much into Iron Man, but they could have had a little fun with that and made a little more visual, something a little bit more like, hey, don't worry that you're just a head, lungs, and hand, because now you can be... You know, maybe even the jetpack thing, they could have referenced that from...
He's so much more than that now.
Yeah!
He's not limited to just his physical body. He can
be
anything.
Or even just RoboCop. I mean, he could be, you know, a dad with some sort of, you know, prosthetic...
Robo-dad.
Prosthetic, you know, type body. I don't know, something a little bit more human-like.
It's actually a remake of Ghost Dad.
It's like, Ian, they actually have stuff like that.
I'm just saying that, you know, they could have been a little critique.
That's a good point. That brings us to the whole family issue, because basically... we get to see a lot more of his family.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately.
And care a whole lot less.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he has that scene where he goes back to see his kid and his family, and he goes and talks to his kid, and he's like, says, do you want to touch it? Like
you know, talking about his
robotic body, like... He's glistening.
Touch my robotic body.
Yeah.
I dare you.
I actually started tearing up in the back of the theater. I hid that from you guys. It was a very touching scene. No,
you went to the back of the theater to cry? Guys, I'll be right back. His metal brushed carbon fiber body. Yeah, like as if that's what they would talk about.
Yeah.
You know, like as if anyone would care. Like, it's not, hi, I've missed you so much and I'm glad you're alive.
They did have that one line where he recorded all the hockey games and he was waiting for him to see, you know...
the Reds game.
But that's exactly what that whole scene was. It was that one line and touch the suit, you know? Yeah. That's it.
Yeah, it's not like...
Rekindling.
Explaining to him. It's not talking to the kid as if he's a real person.
It did nothing to generate anything from the audience like, you know, oh my God, this is, you know... This is his family, you know?
An interesting thing, actually, what I had kind of wanted to... It just occurred to me is that I think... I just wanted to get you guys' opinion on this, but... In the original film, I almost kind of felt like they had to create RoboCop because... As if to imply that you couldn't make a good law enforcement robot because you need... Because... Due to limitations in the technology, you could have a completely robotic law enforcement device or whatever that just could not think like a human. Mm-hmm. Like, essentially saying that computers, that will never be able to think like humans. And what I really kind of want to clarify that, in that computers are really good at certain things, but other things, other certain types of reasoning, they're currently not so good at. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't really necessarily have true AI yet. And I almost felt like in the first movie they were kind of implying that you needed that human element. Not even necessarily on an emotional level, but you needed that human element to be able to process certain things.
I see what you're saying, because that's essentially what RoboCop was versus N-209. N-209 was strictly a machine, whereas RoboCop had that human element.
Yeah.
And could make the distinction like, you know, okay, this, you know, the guy, where he blows the guy
like,
away.
How do I go downstairs?
Yeah. Like
you need, like, human, because the human, I don't know.
In this new one, they've gone to great lengths to show you how the robots are better.
Yeah.
Than him.
Actually, on that note, I'd like to say that this movie almost seemed to have a message when talking about, like, the current affairs aspect that, you know, robots in law enforcement technology is coming whether you like it or not, and this is a movie that we've crafted around this issue to present that, you know.
But they didn't have the balls to get at that.
Well, and that's why I think Samuel L. Jackson's character was, Pat Novak, was like, he was vying for that and arguing for that through the whole movie. That's what he was all about and all enraged about, that, you know, politicians and senators and all these things are denying us how much greater machines could make our lives and our country and all that sort of thing.
You know, I mean, this is kind of just my personal opinion on that matter in real life outside of the movie, but, you know, if you're going to argue having a human being making a decision opposed to a robot, like, for example, you know, a human being could be addicted to drugs and could kill a child because it needs money for, you know, drugs, as to where a robot wouldn't. It would be,
yeah,
you know, would make it, but then, you know, in the movie that senator made the argument. He said, you know, if one of your robots killed a kid, would it feel anything?
Mm-hmm.
Opposed to, oh, well, if a human being killed a kid, would it feel anything? Like, it
doesn't make a difference. Right. But yeah, I think that actually really is now I think we're really getting to the issue here, is that this is where the movie could have gone that would have made it good.
Mm-hmm.
It never explored the issue of what robotic law enforcement would impact it would have at home. It never discussed the potential for abuse, and it never talked about what life in America would be like if we switched over to that type of system. Also, yeah, it never really got into the fact that, I mean, what really differentiates the robot from the human is, like, mercy? Is a robot capable of having mercy? Is it able to differentiate between, like John had just kind of said, was, you know, did this person steal because they were starving?
Right.
Did they steal, you know, just because they needed a fix? Like, I mean, those are issues that they could have explored that would have made this relevant and interesting.
Right. I agree. But I think it also could have really explored these issues of, Where does the role of law enforcement stop and justice begin? Because it's not law enforcement's role to deliver justice. That's Judge Dredd. He's judge, jury, and executioner all in one.
Right.
By the way, did you guys see the new Judge Dredd?
I did, yeah. You see it?
No.
I think we have to watch that.
Yeah, I do remember you getting some higher praises than
I have to say that I would, after seeing the first one, that's kind of off the subject now, but I definitely think we should watch that, because
the original?
No, the new remake. One, because I actually watched that twice, because I was on Netflix, and I haven't seen the movie that I wanted to watch again in a long time. And I mean, within like a week or so of that, and I'm still watching again, so. Anyways, but on to your thought.
Yeah, it's, there's a scene, you know, spoilers at the end. It's basically a rehash of the end of the first one, where he overrides his directives, or, you know.
But he kind of doesn't, though, in the first one.
That's right, he finds
Bob
a way
Jones,
around it.
Not Bob Jones, but the old man has to fire Dick Jones.
Right.
In order to...
So he's no longer a member of CP, and then he can count.
Right.
Yep. Which makes them glossing over that even worse. Less excusable, yeah. Because yeah. That was their chance to kind of add something. Yeah. If they were going to follow the RoboCop story so strictly, they could have added that and made that an issue, and they just...
Right, but, so what I'm getting at, though, is that he does shoot whatever his name is, I forget the character, Michael Keaton's character. Did he shoot him lethally? With a bullet or a taser?
He shot him with a gun on the helipad. And the thing that wasn't very emotional about that scene is that he just physically couldn't do it. When he physically went to go raise his gun, he just couldn't. Yeah. And in the end, he just physically triumphed over the robotics of his arm. Was it mind over matter though?
Well, we don't know.
You have a robotic body, like you know what I mean? It was just like, okay, so he
Is that justice? Right. Did he kill the owner of OCP?
He did, and it wasn't very clear. As it zooms out, you can see that he's still laying on his back, and there's a pool of blood around his head. But it wasn't clear where he got shot or if he died.
I don't think it was even necessarily clear if that man was, like, really a bad guy to a point, until at the end, in the last 20 seconds of his life, he just, you know,
waved a gun at his
family, yeah. And then you're like, oh, no, he's gotta go. Yeah. Like, no, I mean, yeah, he's an ass, but... it doesn't mean he hasn't done anything other than that to like.
Well, I think he deserves to be investigated and tried.
Yeah,
but that's not what RoboCop did. He just shot him, which is not what police officers are supposed to do, right? I mean, I guess he was armed. I guess we're supposed to feel like he was threatening, and RoboCop had to use discretion and force. But it's still, you know. I think it just glossed over this notion of what justice, mm-hmm. what the role of law enforcement, you know?
Yeah, okay, so I was going to ask you, do you feel that was lacking in the film? Is that something that could have been added to the film that would have helped it out? and I say that because, you know, with respect to the astrology of this film and all that sort of thing, whereas RoboCop the first was, you know, we talked about how it had all these water themes and water keywords associated with it. This remake was actually more fire dominant, and long story short, it was overt in this use of fire signs and actors and all that sort of thing, mm-hmm. and very lacking in the element of air, which would have given us that justice element.
Sure.
And that Raymond Sellers' character was originally, they were looking for Hugh Laurie and Clive Owen to fulfill that role, mm-hmm. and who are both air signs and may have fulfilled that lack of justice in that whole motif. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it could have gone a lot in more interesting directions if they hadn't spent most of the movie just explaining to us what RoboCop mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. and what his limitations are before they put him on the street, because I think they did like a virtual demonstration.
Right.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And I thought, why are we seeing this? Why are they wasting our time right. showing us a simulation of him fighting crime? Not even fighting crime, it's just like a demo.
Right.
A tutorial.
It's, it's to establish, I think, that rivalry between Jackie Earle Haley's character and mm-hmm. in RoboCop, I guess. I mean, I guess that's the only thing I can really think of.
Right. But again, it was something that was poorly done. It had lots of potential to incorporate, you know, consciousness, themes of consciousness and virtual reality, mm-hmm. So on and so forth.
I think they also could have gone a lot further with what does robophobic mean? Because, you know, they basically said half the country wants robot policemen, half the country doesn't. Mm-hmm. All right. That's like a given in this movie that we don't actually get to see people being afraid of robots in America whether they should or shouldn't be.
Right.
You know, we don't see, like you said, we don't see robots acting abusively. We see them intimidating foreigners at the beginning. Mm. But that's the only effort the movie goes to demonstrate what it's like to have robots enforcing the streets. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't do a very good job of really explaining why they're there, exactly what they're doing. Because what are they doing besides playing in front of the camera? in that scene. You know, like, there's no stated mission other than to just walk around and make sure that people don't have guns.
Right.
And and like when you think about how many robots were in that opening scene, like, given how efficient they're supposed to be at their jobs, like, there were way too many of them in that opening scene. Like, you literally had one, like, posted, like, every, like, I don't know, like, 100 feet? Not even, like, more than that. Yeah. Like, there were just so many of them.
Right.
And, like, why? Mm. I don't know. That's just another issue with the movie, I guess. But actually, one thing, you know, that I want to ask you, Ian, is I know you had talked about how you actually thought this movie was pretty well cast, right?
Well,
that maybe it was more so the screenwriting or the director that kind of, like, hampered this story.
Because
I noticed you said that there were differences in, like, especially from the astrological perspective, how this movie was cast differently than the original.
Well, it was cast differently in the respect that they wanted to re-emphasize more fire sign qualities. That this movie did focus more on the tones of consciousness and will and all these things that are associated with the fire sign quality. And that, yeah, of course, it was cast well from the astrological perspective. That, you know, they really, you know, over half of the top 12 billed cast were fire signs. But in terms of, like, you know, the actors themselves and the quality of the acting, you know, the two biggest stars were both Gary Oldman and Samuel L. Jackson. And that, yeah, you know, they certainly brought their guns loaded. You know, I'm fans of them. And it was poorly casted in the sense that there was too much of that one element, and that we didn't see a good balance overall. And that that's why we may have been lacking in certain substances, like justice, themes of justice, which would have been promoted by air signs. I suppose they sort of hit the nail on the head with, you know, casting all the nefarious characters or the antagonists with earth and water elements, which would oppose air and fire. But ultimately, the extreme lack of air signs in this film was detrimental to the overall theme. But, you know, again, you know, like all of Alex Murphy's family were all fire signs, so that, yeah, you know, you did see some sort of passion between the mother, the Alex Murphy and his wife. There was that quick little risque scene, and so the elements of passion are consistent with fire signs, all that sort of thing. You know, they don't list John Paul Rutten's character, who played Murphy's son, David Murphy. But using the model I've constructed, I would predict and feel pretty confident in the prediction that, you know, David Paul Rutten is most likely a Leo, Aries, or Sagittarius.
And that just proves, too, that you can cast something right, like on paper, I guess. But if you, I mean, that's only part of the picture, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right. You know, you have to execute. It was poor execution. And that, yeah, astrology is something I argue can be used as a rubric or a template to construct a theoretical cast, and that you can just draw upon these elements to create the script, let's say. But ultimately, I feel that there were just so many hidden agendas or ulterior motives as to what the production company wanted from this movie, so that, you know, the director himself, you know, his hands were sort of tied with a lot of the creative processes. And had he been given a little bit more freer rein, or had the... that's the other thing, too, is that, you know, we talk about how astrology really is this ideology,
yeah,
and that it doesn't always work. I mean, if it did, then there would be nothing to argue. It would be obvious. For instance, they couldn't secure Hugh Laurie in the film. You know what I mean? So, I mean, are they just going to appeal to every Gemini in the world that's suited for the role until they get one? No, of course not. You know, time is money. Things move along. Right. They got to get somebody in there. So, everything has the potential of going one way or another. But you know, the elements were certainly there. They're certainly there to see and to analyze, for yourself.
I mean, it seems like basically this movie lacks all the substance of not the RoboCop is like this holy grail of, like, you know, relevant messages and, you know, art is life and life is art. It's not, you know, but it definitely has feeling to it, whereas this one doesn't have a feeling. Mm. It's cold. It's hollow. It's like it's consuming itself, mm-hmm. just for no purpose. You know, it's not really imparting a message. It's just explaining a message,
right,
without really having taking a stance or anything. It's
got the appearance of having substance, but not really delivering.
I feel like this movie was, you know, they had. Like, oh, okay, there's some catchphrases from the original we got to throw in there. There's some topics we want to poke on. There's some emotional things we want to throw in. I just feel like they kind of just pasted these things in and filled the cracks in with, like, a story. And it wasn't very, you know, I didn't feel like it was written out very well.
Right.
Yeah. Which it could have been, you said earlier, was it the writing?
Yeah.
You know, and I just feel like when we talked about the, you know, the human and the robot thing, like I said, you know, it's just bits and pieces of emotional things in there, but it wasn't a strong, solid topic.
A good cooking analogy would be to describe it as all the ingredients were there on the table, but you're kind of looking at it before they were blended together.
Right.
I don't know, I guess.
I mean,
any piece of art or any story can be picked apart. Like, you criticize it enough and you'll start finding places where it falls apart, but ideally what you want is to have to look hard to find them, not have them be staring you in the face on the first time you watch it. You know, like, one of the things that stood out to me in terms of just more nonsense in the story writing. If we're led to believe that robots are so superior, why don't they have a robot doing brain surgery on him? Why is Dr. Dennett doing the brain surgery himself?
Right.
Why is there not a machine doing the brain surgery?
Right.
Why did Dr. Dennett decide to program him 5 minutes before he was supposed to appear at a press conference?
Also, when they make him and they set the AI or whatever for the mechanic part to just do the fighting for him, and they're like, oh yeah, well, he thinks he's doing it, but he's not. Why wouldn't they just build a robot in the first place? Say that it's part human, say that it can think, and just have the program be like, you know what, yeah, I mean? Right. It was unnecessary. They could have just said, oh yeah, it is part human, and make it seem like it was.
I mean, that basically, there's just lots of plot devices, lots of very convenient writing that defies common sense, but it's written in just to provide some continuity of the story. I mean, the fact at the end that basically RoboCop gets beaten by the Ed-209s, and the only thing that saves him is his partner stepping in front of him, and then the Ed-209s can't shoot a bystander or a cop or whatever. But so the Ed-209s just stop shooting. But these, like, highly sophisticated and versatile crime-fighting units don't have non-lethal weapons. Mm.
Right.
They just basically become inert when they can't kill something.
Right.
You know, or just shoot over.
Yeah, step aside and shoot around. Yeah, that's just so contrived. Yeah. And that's what, I think that kind of defines a movie, is
right.
just all contrived.
Right.
And mm-hmm. nakedly contrived.
Right.
Yeah. But, you guys got any more closing statements?
Yeah, you know, I think this movie tried, had a good run.
Did it, though?
You know, yeah. on a basic level of stimulation when watching the movie, I liked the explosions and the action. Though, like, that one action scene that was in the dark, I didn't catch all that, but, you know, but it was okay. Definitely want to recommend seeing it to anyone who's thinking about seeing it.
If you're not thinking about seeing it.
Certainly wouldn't buy that movie for a dollar.
Nice.
But, yeah.
So
I don't think it lived up to
it. Recommend against RoboCop 2014.
I do. I strongly advise. Unless, you know...
Just wait for the sequel, right?
Unless you want to see it with some friends and have a good laugh. Mm-hmm. And if you just don't mind spending $12 for, like, a good time, then by all means, go ahead. But if, you know, if you want to invest your money in a solid
state,
a solid half, like, an hour and a half of entertainment, I advise against it.
I'll just finish by saying with what I started is that, you know, don't spend the money seeing it in the theaters or on the DVD, but if you have to see it, you know, rent it. And but I figured we probably could bring up and discuss any movies that might be coming out for future review ideas or anything that might have caught someone's attention. I don't really. Was there any previews for RoboCop 2014 that?
I was going to say that, you know, if you want to continue the conversation about consciousness and machines, there's the new Johnny Depp movie, Transcendence, coming out, where he plays a scientist who downloads his consciousness into a machine, into computers. I mean, that's the gist of it. I don't know more about it, but that's a theme. It's, you know.
Depp is a Gemini, who suggested would, if they had cast one in RoboCop 2014, may have had some effect on the overall themes.
Quality of the movie.
Geminis are, you know, typically associated with air signs or consciousness, all that sort of thing. They're also known for their engineering skills, all that sort of thing. Mad scientist, and that's why I feel he was cast in the remake of Willy Wonka, where Gene Wilder was also a Gemini, so... And he obviously embodies the wacky scientist who also appeals to children. Gemini have this childlike quality to them that they're most known for. But Transcendence, I'll have to check that out. Yeah. For what it's worth, I'll offer, I saw previews for the movie Noah, which obviously has all the religious implications to it. But aside from that, what I found interesting was that, again, that's going to be a very fire sign dominant movie. But it's also directed by Darren Aronofsky, who himself is an Aquarius, and he did the film The Fountain. I don't know if you guys seen that film.
I've seen that.
And I can tell from the previews that a lot of the imagery that Aronofsky's sort of known for is going to be present in that film. But one last interesting note is that because this movie is already right off the bat, the idea of doing a movie like Noah, stirs certain controversy. That whenever a movie like this is going to be done, production companies are going to offer a disclaimer in the beginning telling you that this is strictly an artistic interpretation of a film, and so on and so forth, which is basically telling you that it's not going to be what you should expect from any sort of religious point of view. It's not going to be a strict reinterpretation of the Bible or the Genesis account of the flood, all that sort of thing.
It's a reboot.
Yeah.
Hey, it's only a matter of time. You know, they're running out of movies to make. They gotta make another book into a movie.
I only point out it because I do like Aronofsky. I see that there's gonna be a lot of imagery there, but as well, it's Russell Crowe, so we should expect something gladiatorial or was Robin Hood.
I mean, it's really gonna be the ultra masculine, violent,
domineering
Noah that we all know.
Pretty much, Yeah.
What sign is Kurt Russell?
Pisces.
Does that have anything to do with water or anything like that?
Yes.
Because he was in Master and Commander, which was a...
Russell Crowe?
Yeah. What was Kurt Russell in?
Kurt Russell Crowe.
What was the guy in the... Who was the guy in the thing?
Kurt Russell.
Now, who's in Noah?
Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe was in Master and Commander.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I see what you're saying, that obviously he's a fire sign that wouldn't work with the water-esque movies, but that, would have more to do with the fact that Aries is a cardinal sign and they have these leadership type qualities, and thus he was the master and commander.
But basically, Kurt Russell Crowe is going to basically just manhandle all the animals into the ark.
Yeah. See,
draw the sword and prevent the other
might
people
be
from
getting
their boat.
Yeah.
Actually, it's on topic. I don't know if you guys paid attention, but a couple weeks ago, Bill Nye had a debate with I can't remember the
Ham.
Science. Yeah.
Ham.
Basically, it was a creationist philosophy versus side.
Bill Nye philosophy.
Evolutionary philosophy. Yeah, I mean, it's, evolution is a theory, and I'll grant that. But anyway, so that it was a live broadcast debate, and Ham, since then, has gotten so much attention and support that he's actually able to fund the building of an ark. They're going to build an ark to the scale and dimensions as depicted in the Bible.
How many cubits was that, dude?
But I just kept to wonder why. What exactly is that proving?
That you can make an ark.
I guess I'm not, but go ahead.
But no one's debating whether or not you can make an ark.
Right.
That's not the point. The point is,
unless they know something we don't know, Adrian.
Like, I think what Bill Nye was saying too is that it's not about whether you can build an ark, it's whether or not an ark can support all these animals.
Or if the flood even happened, which would not
actually
be proven.
I think there is actually evidence for like a great flood.
Pretty sure there's evidence of two great floods, actually.
Well, you'd have to go about building the ark with all the tools available to a man of that period. And you'd have to have, what, Noah and his family do it? Like,
there's the theory, remember, from the 12th planet, that the ark was actually kind of a metaphor for some sort of like DNA storage device.
Right.
Kind of like Dennis Nedry's shaving can in
Jurassic
Park.
Yeah, we just genomes in a can, basically.
I mean, well, there you go. There's some like sophisticated symbolic thinking involved. Not just like, this is literally a giant boat.
Right.
That we're going to build another giant boat and say, Bible must be true then, because we can do.
I think anyone who's going to spend the money to build a real ark in this year is just a little bit of stupidity.
It's the money.
Yeah, it's just childish. Like,
I didn't actually catch that debate, although I did catch a review of that debate. If you can believe that,
you actually watched a video of someone watching that debate.
I could say that the review, it did talk about how this, you know, the Ham's philosophies or arguments were way, you know, it was very polarized in promotion of young earth creationism, all that sort of thing. But that's just that one point. The second point is that, believe it or not, and of course I don't have anything to cite here, but I did hear, read, or see on TV about a guy, I believe it was in the Netherlands, somewhere in the Netherlands, Denmark or whatever, who claims to have had a vision or a dream or something to that effect, where he actually did undertake to build an ark according to the specifications of the Bible, and that he did, and this was almost 2 or 3 years ago now, and that obviously didn't really. I think he's trying to insist that he had some, you know, prophetic vision of another flood coming or whatever. You know, all that aside, I'm pretty sure that he did actually build an ark according to the specifications.
The project is tied up in a lot of.
But I do obviously agree that, you know, no matter which way you slice this, it's a complete waste of money, and I hope it's not the taxpayers paying for it.
The movie Noah?
No, this guy Ham, getting the funds from somewhere.
First of all, his name's Ham, so
that's his last name.
Biblical.
I don't remember his first.
Kurt Russell Ham.
Kurt Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
But
hyphenated.
Well, it's donations. Actually, I heard it's in the millions. So obviously, they're just building a prop for the movie Noah. It's just like a set piece. No, they're not. I hope that that's what it is. But
sorry. I had another thought.
But yeah, I mean, don't you think that you could use that money for some more,
like,
Christian endeavors, you know, like, besides just building a giant ark?
Like Christian Mingle.
Yeah, you think after the Great Pyramids or the Big Dig, we don't have the Big Dig project?
I grouped the two of those things together so easily.
Well, because they're compared. You know, they said that never since the Great Pyramids was there a construction project as large scale as the Big Dig.
Until now.
Yeah. Yeah, right. You know, I don't. And not to mention that building an ark is a very scientific engineering process. You know what I mean? It's not spiritually uplifting and fulfilling. It's not
in this day and age. Building an ark isn't that difficult.
What I'm saying is that it does require math and science. And, you know, things.
Yeah, but that's part of the debate. Was that Bill and I was saying, you build a boat that big and put it on the water, and it's going to fall apart under the stress of its own weight as it twists and turns in the waves and stuff. It's like you have to build it in such a way that it can survive the constant twisting and turning and stresses of being on water.
The idea is that the Ark was more of like a submersible submarine type idea, where most of the hull and the keel were would remain underwater, and that the buoyancy of it being filled with water would sort of counteract all those sort of things.
So it was like the monitor.
And again, most of those debates and arguments really are just, they're foolish, actually, and which is what you might expect, you know what I mean? But, you know, for Bill Nye, a scientist, to not himself see that, you know what I mean? And just totally debase the idea that it's not possible to build an Ark under?
Yeah, we could have a whole other
discussion on that. Yeah.
Maybe Bill was just having around this guy. Like, just messing around with him.
Still reeling from the fact that Beekman was a lot better than...
Please don't say that in my house.
Better than... science show.
Yeah, but I think that'll put a cap on our... weekly review of Bill Nye. But yeah, that was a good talk about RoboCop. And I think I'll try to see Jose Padilla's other movies, because I hear that those are pretty good. Elite Squad, I think there's another one.
Is there any way that we can ask the viewers of this for suggestions for movies to see next?
I think there's no possible way to do that.
Okay.
The technology just doesn't exist yet.
But why don't we ask the viewers of our audio podcast if...
Would they like to make some
suggestions? If there's any way we can ask them. Alright, this is gone long enough. Good night and good luck to everyone.